I know it's going to be a good day because Rich is dancing. Good morning. Welcome. I'm Joe Donahue. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. I just realized I have that. I have a little gravel to my voice this morning.
You do.
So like you can sell Arby's sandwiches.
Yeah. What did you say?
I said you can sell Arby's sandwiches.
That's right. Now with cheese. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. We are very happy to have you. It's Wednesday. It's the 28th, and we are we have a lot to talk about. So we will get to it. Let me introduce everybody. And panel at WAMC.org is where you can join us. Panel at WAMC.org. I'll be completely honest with you. I'm a little behind because Bob and I were, we were basically gossiping.
Guilty.
I need to catch up on the break. Hurry up. 9:30. Come.
He didn't mean anything he said about you, Rosemary.
Nothing to do with here, but something to do with an individual out in the community, and that we both have a
dealing
with.
Do Rich and I know this person too?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay. We got to get to the break.
I heard the name. I'll tell you.
Tell me later. Yeah.
Okay. So for that reason, I'm a little behind. But anyway, good morning, all. Welcome. I'm delighted to have you all here. Alan Chartok is here. He is here right on time. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine as long as it wasn't me you were talking about.
No, not at all. No, as I said, nobody around here. No, this is a person... a person I think you would know, but probably not well, would be my guess.
Okay, I buy it.
Yeah. We also welcome investigative journalist, so she'll be able to find out. Investigative journalist and RPI adjunct, Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you, as always. Corporate attorney with Phillips Lytle, LLP, Rich Honan in the house. Good morning, Rich.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Really nice to have you here.
Always nice to finally meet Bob in real life.
We've
been on together, but we never met. And I get to see Rosemary,
yes,
who I never
I
get to see.
Dance,
so it's a pleasure.
That's
you
good.
Need to come by more often. We need targets. John Faso's been sidelined a while, so.
I know. I heard that Faso was getting more hate mail than I am.
Oh, he's not. He's not like you, personable and interesting. He just drones on and hogs the conversation.
John.
And
I like John.
Awful.
I think he's a good dude.
Ugh.
Maybe that'll get me some mail.
Then. God. Bob Griffin is with us. He's Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity at the University at Albany. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Joe. And whatever Rosemary says, I'm going to claim it's fake news. And now I know why you don't have a security clearance, too.
A fun little game we were playing in the newsroom the other day was how many panelists have security clearances? It's a surprisingly high number.
Three? Four,
I believe. Yeah. So
does Malcolm have one? He's never mentioned it.
1-800-3. No. Just suddenly giving the number because I don't want to talk. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Okay, let's go to the news of the day. And that was very funny, Rich. let's talk about Kevin McCarthy and how Kevin McCarthy's political machine worked to sway the GOP field. This from the Washington Post. Allies spent millions in a sometimes secretive effort to weed out candidates who could cause the House leader trouble or jeopardize GOP victories in November. This is how Kevin McCarthy's political machine worked to sway the GOP field. Representative Madison Cawthorn made a name for himself as a firebrand social media phenomenon who delighted in trolling the left, famously boasting to colleagues that he had built his House office by focusing on communications, not legislation. But the strategy made him vulnerable to forces within his own party that helped end his time in office. Top allies of Kevin McCarthy, the House Republican leader, worked this spring to deny Cawthorn a second term in office after the Trump-endorsed lawmaker made controversial statements about cocaine use and sex parties in Washington that led McCarthy to announce that he had lost my trust, according to multiple Republicans briefed on the effort, which has not been previously reported. GOP lobbyist Jeff Miller, one of McCarthy's closest friends and biggest fundraisers, and Brian Walsh, a Republican strategist who works for multiple McCarthy-backed groups, were both involved in an independent effort to oppose Cawthorn as part of a broader project to create a more functioning GOP caucus next year, said the Republicans, who, like others, spoke on the condition of anonymity. So I am fascinated on the story about McCarthy in particular. But, Alan, if you are powerful and you want to be the House Speaker, isn't this just what you do?
Well, I think you do. I mean, I think people are going to have to understand that as a leader, you're going to be making decisions that are going to be not helpful to a lot of people. You know, I'm not a McCarthy fan, that is for sure. You know, he does what he has to do, he thinks, and so far he's the leader. You know what I mean? In other words, he's the leader. How do you get there?
So standard operating procedure is my question, Rosemary.
I kept wondering if I could think of a case where Nancy Pelosi had done something similar, and I cannot. She leaves the choice of which Democrat gets sent to Congress to the voters, which McCarthy, actually, whether he does or not, he's going to end up with the likes of Madison Cawthorn and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz, and he seems perfectly willing to work with those two wackadoodles. But Madison, he did not, because he personally libeled McCarthy and other Republicans. So I don't feel sorry for Madison, but McCarthy is just, he is the embodiment, Alan, of the politician you always describe, who only is thinking of his own ambition.
Sure.
He has lied about January 6th. He has hidden information. He is going to empower. He already has empowered, but will do it further with Marjorie Taylor Greene. These are not good Republicans. They're not good people. It does not help the party, and he doesn't care. He doesn't care about the party or the Congress or America. He cares about him being Speaker. It's just despicable.
Could you say wackadoodle just one more time?
Yeah.
You know, the interesting thing I think about McCarthy is that sometimes you see these hypocritical moments that play out over time. But with January 6th, it was a matter of a day and a half. Yeah. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. You know, like you're sort of on this speed plane. The president, I'm very concerned. This is awful. And now I have to go down to Mar-a-Lago and take my picture with him, which I find interesting. Rich Cronin, would you care to join in on the conversation?
Yeah. You know, on the conservative conference call that we have every day,
yes.
I will share with you that, you know, nobody's terribly impressed with Kevin McCarthy.
How could you be?
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, I think they think he's what, you know, a majority leader, excuse me, and in their minds, a speaker, you know, is supposed to be, you know, kind of towing the party line and keeping power.
A little too ambitious.
Yeah, well, you know, you're right. They're there. They're where they are for a reason, whether it's him or Pelosi or any of them. So I don't know that anybody's particularly impressed. I don't know that I'm that surprised that he's using his power and his money and his influence to try and get electable Republicans out there. I would think if he wasn't doing that, he wouldn't be doing his job. I think the only kind of salacious part of the story is, you know, it's kind of a direct, this is the problem the Republican Party has been facing, is that, you know, Trump uses his influence at the primary level to get people elected who the party elders believe are unelectable in a general election. And the Democrats have been even more creative about it, I think, in a smart way. You have these stories of Democrats actually, Rosemary, Nancy Pelosi is seeing that money goes to actually electing right-wing Republicans in disputed elections.
Sean Patrick Maloney for that.
Okay, but whoever. Yeah, but I don't.
Who's get, in some trouble, according to the paper this morning, Rosemary?
Deserves it, yes.
I don't get the feeling much gets done without her, at least, tacit approval. You know, this is the game, right?
I do think that is sort of a despicable thing, and also dangerous, because that was the game they played with Trump, and where did that end up? You put in a right winger, and they couldn't get elected in the environment we have now. But I also do appreciate that they want to stop Republicans. You know, the urge is, I
that's
agree,
their
is,
job.
Yeah,
that is their
yeah.
job.
And I do think this is just politics as usual. You think about what McConnell said about candidate quality. And, you know, I will disagree with you, Rosemary. I do think it happens on the Democratic side. I think that they use PACs and they use dark money in order to funnel funding to candidates that they don't like. As far as McCarthy, you know, you think about it, it's typically all about him. And I can't say always, but it seems like more often than not. But think about it, okay? You know, he says something bad about Trump, and then he tries to cover his track because you know, well, he has no loyalty to Trump, but that doesn't mean that he doesn't bow to him. He shows no loyalty to the country. If you think about how he came out pretty strongly against the insurrection on January 6th and then backed off on it. Now he has no loyalty to the party, although I think this is one of those situations where the Post is purposely trying to throw a firebomb into the midst of Republican elections, because it really, you know, it doesn't surprise me that he was trying to find candidates that A, would support him, and B, would be electable. And then as far as the other situation, Joe, if I had to go to a sex party with a bunch of octogenarians in D.C., I'd probably want cocaine too, but I just would just leave that on the table.
Yeah, it's not like Cawthorn, you know, covered himself in glory.
Yeah, I don't know what he covered himself in, but I'll just...
No.
I mean, and we say, we're talking about him, like, covering his tracks and doing normal things. His loyalty to himself resulted in his dispatch of Liz Cheney, who is a stalwart of the party, a true conservative, a principled politician. He dumped her. Yeah. He and now may remove her from the party if his latest thing is true. He wants to follow Gaetz and Taylor Greene. It's really despicable, and I have a really hard time thinking of a Democratic parallel to that.
Well, Nancy Pelosi.
Who did she dump? What did she lie to betray? Give me an example. Well, I can't think of it.
I don't know first of all, I don't know the intra-party conflicts. I don't know who might have wanted to primary somebody.
So she does it better. She's not getting caught the way McCarthy is.
I think she's far smoother than him. And by the way, I think if she had been, I'm not going to say she was asleep at the wheel. You think she was, in retrospect, you think she might have helped out the person who AOC beat in the primary, who didn't show up, who literally did not show up to a debate and ended up getting blindsided. I think in retrospect, there might be some people who are saying, boy.
She didn't support him enough because she, like everyone else, thought he was safe.
Yeah. But you're right about this idea that how many times do all of us political watchers get surprised? I'm sure in 2016, I'm sure the Hillary people were saying, oh, please let it be Trump.
Right. Exactly true.
Absolutely.
And in 2008.
Yay, it's Trump. We're going to win.
And similarly, in 2008, how many of the Republicans were saying, wow, can this guy Obama actually beat the juggernaut that is Hillary? Mm-hmm. You know, great.
And if you think about the speaker, if you think the speaker is in third in line, succession, if there's something happens to the president, vice president, it's an extremely powerful position.
God.
And if
I
you think about somebody, you know, one of my personal heroes was Tip O'Neill, but he was no angel. I mean, you crossed Tip O'Neill, then you know. You wouldn't get a road built in your district for years.
Yeah. But I feel like Tip O'Neill was, and maybe this is glamorized a little bit, I feel like he was still part of the time when, you know, a Senator Joe Biden and a Senator John McCain could, you know, have a drink together and Senator Ted Kennedy and kind of hammer out, you know, actual good stuff to get done.
Kennedy and Orrin Hatch, that cross-party work was what I think made Congress work better than it is right now.
When you think about, this is a press question now, because...
Oh, yeah, I have to refute something Bob said. There's no meeting at the Washington Post saying, oh, I know how we can get the Republicans. We'll just put this in and it'll mess them up. What happens is a bunch of sources are saying, hey, you guys should write about this. There's Kevin McCarthy's like working behind the scenes.
I bet there's somebody in there that said...
Three reporters. Top, front page, top. Right. Above the fold. My just question is, for what I would perceive, and it seems like most in this room perceive, as to be business as usual for political purposes to advance.
Yeah, and an item, Rosemary, that's got to be what, number 10 on the list of most important items of the day. You know, between inflation, what's going on in Europe, what's going on in England,
Florida,
obviously. You know,
there's room for 5 stories on the front page.
Okay, and you think that's one of the top 5 of today?
Not for many newspapers, certainly not the Times Union in Albany, but for the Washington Post, whose stock and trade, whose audience are politicians. Of course I do.
Yeah.
No.
I think
here we're worried about Capitol Whites.
Right. Front page news.
That's right. Yeah.
And it is. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of tradition. That's a front page story, too.
I thought the front page, I didn't realize the UAlbany basketball team couldn't practice in their own. They're not going to have any games in their own gym.
No, they're redoing the.
I'm not looking at you, Bob, like it's your
yeah,
call.
Yeah, no, it's not my gym, but it's. It's under renovations. Yes.
Yes.
Wow.
All right.
It is not the Griffin Arena.
Well, yet. Yet.
That has a nice ring to it.
We will take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Bob Griffin, and Rich Honan make up our panel. And we will continue on this conversation, take some letters, and also move on to other stuff as well. Panel at WAMC.org. We will continue after this news from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Just chuckling, reading the mail.
Okay.
I love how Rosemary is often so rational and measured and then drops some off-the-cuff bat blank like NATO should go to war with Russia.
Who's that from?
Jay.
Yes, Jay. I'm very exciting.
Wow.
Thank you for the chuckle, though, Jay.
Yeah, no, it amused me, I must say.
Well, you know, the president has ordered, or the State Department has ordered Americans out of Russia. You're likely to be conscripted into an army to fight Ukraine if you don't. We're getting closer and closer. Sorry, it's not completely bat blank crazy.
Closer to what?
To direct war? To a direct war. And the next step, the referendums went exactly as Putin, of course, sent in his army to make sure they came out. And the next step will be annexing them. And then the next Ukrainian attack in Donbass is an attack on Russia, which justifies, in Putin's mind, nuclear weapons. We're not far from what I'm talking about. Yeah. I'm afraid of it. I'm not happy to be right.
Yeah. And does anybody believe these leaks were actually leaks?
No. No, you're talking
Nord Stream
about
the gas line leaks. Yeah. I thought you meant news leaks.
Yeah, no,
went
no.
Automatically.
These are real
what?
Leaks.
What?
Yeah,
another?
In the leaks, the about the pipeline leaks, the leaks occurred outside of the Danish sovereign waters. So it couldn't be construed as an attack on Denmark or on NATO. So there couldn't be a legal response from NATO.
Interesting.
It is everything just lines up with, this was definitely a setup.
Yeah, and as we head to winter, that becomes
really
difficult.
Really,
I mean, Europe has big energy issues.
He's turning the screws on Europe right now, no doubt about it. And as the unrest grows in Russia, I think your point is, Rosemary, is well made, that Putin and his allies are going to get increasingly more desperate and irrational.
So let's go to this story, which is about we know that there was going to be a January 6th committee hearing today. That has been canceled, they say, because of Hurricane Ian. I make that sound like that's questionable, but it seems to be the reason, and we'll take them at their word for that. So now the question is, when will that happen, and what will be done? And then there's also this new issue about Roger Stone and promoting violence, then seeking a pardon after January 6th, according to evidence, which apparently is being looked at by the committee. The texts from Mr. Stone are among the evidence expected to be presented at the House Investigative Committee's next hearing. And that was sort of, that, I guess that was going to be the big reveal today, which will now take place later. Stone started texting with a lawyer representing Donald Trump in a second impeachment trial seeking a pardon. There will be mass prosecutions, Mr. Stone wrote to David. I wrote to the lawyer, mark my words, could Mr. Stone plug his pardon request the next time he spoke to the president? The text messages are part of a trove of video evidence that Danish filmmakers have turned over to the House committee investigating the January 6th, 21 assault on the Capitol, which also shows Mr. Stone threatening violence and spelling out plans to fight the election results. Some of the material was expected in the panel's next hearing, again planned for today, but was postponed abruptly on Tuesday, with the committee members citing the impending impact of the hurricane. At this point, I'd be happy if you pardon me and Carrick again, Mr. Stone wrote to Mr. Stone, referring to Bernie Carrick, the former New York City police commissioner and longtime ally of Mr. Trump, who had reportedly challenged the results of the election. He's already pardoned both of us, so he would take no heat for it whatsoever.
Wow. Yeah. The you know, the cynical side of me says that, that they cancel it because the impact on viewership, particularly with a couple of potentially tighter races in Florida, although it looks like both DeSantis and Rubio are running ahead of their Democratic rivals. I imagine, Joe, that this will occur in the next 2 to 2.5, 3 weeks, because otherwise it's not going to have any impact on the midterm elections. So I think it will be rescheduled relatively quickly. The thing about Stone that I found, you know, I think he's a criminal, but I'll just put that as my own personal bias. But he laid out before the election, he laid out what the playbook was. There's that clip of him talking to folks around him and saying that the election's not going to be decided. You know, you're not going to know what the answer is, but we're just going to go out and tell them that we won, and we're just going to stick to it, and you know, the heck with the process. You know, bring it on. We're just going to say we won. And that's pretty much what they did.
He did that in 2019, well before.
Yeah,
he
laid this out even before the election. He laid this out.
I think the committee's work is done. What impact they're going to have on the midterms has already been made. I don't care really that they canceled it. If it's closer to the actual voting, that's fine. But like I say, I think the major impact is already there. The action now switches to the Department of Justice, where it ought to have begun. Whether Merrick Garland will bring charges, he obviously does have an investigation, but anything that comes out of it now is the next thing that'll have a major impact. And he has a problem, because ethically he's not supposed to do it very close to an election. He's not supposed to take prejudicial action. So
what's your bet?
But Trump's not in the election.
Technically, that's true.
Well, but right? But I mean,
that is
if
true.
He was a candidate, then clearly I think that would fall within their guidelines. But
plus, Trump is involved in his own personal investigation with the Mar-a-Lago record, so that might impact Merrick Garland's action on that case more than on the January 6th insurrection. God, you know, it's so upsetting when you're involved in so many criminal activities that they hardly know a timetable to set up to get you.
Does Garland have the guts to do it all, Rosemary?
I think he's an exceedingly cautious man and will do it by the book, which means he'll put it off.
Rich.
Yeah, I think, you know, the aforementioned conservative conference call, some of the things.
Do you talk to yourself in the morning?
Yes. It's me talking to me.
Show prep.
Yeah, right. The first, obviously, you know, on our side, you know, we think that you guys are putting a lot of eggs in
there
the January.
There are no sides, Rich.
Yeah, a lot of eggs in the January 6th basket. I'm not sure how much of it. It is, we don't think it resonates, but you know, I know you guys do. The
gas prices.
Yeah, gas prices, economy, crime,
gas prices,
immigration,
average.
You know, everyday issues. But that's the one thing. The other thing.
So the loss of democracy does not make an omelet.
Did we lose democracy?
We could have.
No, we couldn't have.
What?
Just stop. What do you mean?
We could.
How could we not have?
How, you think that if somebody storms the White House, do they now control the country? Is that how it works?
Well, what if you take out the vice president and you stop the vote?
Yeah, what if?
Or if you had murdered him?
I heard 4 years of what ifs during the Trump administration that didn't, excuse me, didn't happen. But what I was going to say is, perversely, I think that it
solves that mail now.
Yeah, that's all right. Good. Finally, we have something going on. I really think that it solves some knotty problems for the Republican leadership. The more that Trump gets, what's the word? The more that Trump is weakened,
right? Discredited,
and you know, especially if they lose, as everybody thinks they will, if they lose this Pennsylvania Senate race with Dr. Oz and Fetterman. You know, they're gonna pin a lot of that on Trump, and it really clears the way for who they really want in 2000 and whatever is the next election, 2024 presidential. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that anybody, I don't know that it's really bothering people in the Republican leadership. The other thing I'll say is, you know, look, it's obviously this whole thing was a ratings grab, and the fact that they don't want to share the ratings with the hurricane, or seem like you know, we're being political while people's lives are really being threatened. You know, they don't want that side by side. If it was truly an important hearing and they were truly doing the people's work, they'd go ahead with the hearing. They would go ahead with the hearing, and just not have it be public, or tape it and have it be public later. If it was truly an important hearing. But I agree with
Hurricanes
Rosemary.
Hurricanes have previously stopped whole presidential campaigns, and those are obviously important to the country, too. You stop when there's something like this. And there's a political component to it, no question. We'll get to see how DeSantis governs as opposed to trolls. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. What's he really going to—what— It's funny, you know, obviously Fox News is running, you know, 24 hours, look at DeSantis govern. I'm like, what?
Right.
Okay, the guy's handling a hurricane. I don't know what he's going to do right or wrong that's going to give you some hint into his presidential caliber, right? I mean,
did you have any trouble seeing Andrew Cuomo acting presidential during a COVID crisis? Mm-hmm. Whether you agree with what he did or not, he came off as being in charge, logical, caring.
He did, and you guys,
and that's what DeSantis has to do
and,
now.
And you, yeah, except that Cuomo was wrong on every issue and ends up having to leave office in disgrace.
He
and
wasn't
ends up
wrong on
having
every
closed
issue.
Down our state for 2 years.
I mean, there's still time for DeSantis to do that too, but right. At least initially, he did look the part, and it's. Mm-hmm. It really goes back to it's the Giuliani effect, if you really want to take it back.
True.
To 9/11, when he showed, you know, enormous leadership at a time when the country was looking for leadership. And these type of events in Florida make or break people. But you're right. I mean, he's not the one that's going to be handing out water.
Right.
But the question is, is the state of Florida in a position where they look like they're responding, they look like they're doing what they need to do, mm-hmm. and they're moving as many resources as they can? I mean, this is going to be the litmus test for him, especially with his reelection coming up. If they blow this response, then I can tell you it's going to affect at least a couple points. I don't know if it's enough to push him you know, over the edge, but it will have an impact.
Yeah, I probably agree that he has more to lose by making some huge misstep than he has by handling it, than he has to gain by handling it correctly, because I think there's a playbook and he'll stay with the playbook. I wouldn't point to this and say this is why he should be president, you know, no matter how he does it. And, you know, I agree with you on the Giuliani thing, but, you know, it's the old adage, you know, 90% of success is showing up.
Yeah.
Is that Woody Allen, or is that a real adage?
We don't quote Woody Allen on the show.
Oh, you don't?
Either,
no,
Rich.
More?
Come
okay.
On.
All right.
It's anonymous then.
I was just watching. I was
he's
just,
retired. Now,
I was
Rich.
Watching Play It Again, Sam, the other day, and I'm sorry, but it's still a good movie.
Yeah.
But you know, Rich, if it doesn't go well, the first thing I thought was, oh boy, they could really use that $12 million that he used to pull that stunt of flying folks from Texas to Massachusetts.
Notice you know, how that's disappeared from the news, Bob.
You're absolutely correct, and that's why I think he could be more vulnerable.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion.
I can't believe I just admitted that off air.
Well,
I can tell you, sitting between Rosemary and Rich is like it's like a tennis match during breaks. Like,
yeah, it's very fun.
It's like, wow,
lots of fun. We have a listener who wrote to us and said, "Shut up and get back to the show." So,
okay, that's fair.
Yeah, but they just want to listen to the music. Just like
that's
shut
not,
up.
That's
and get
not
back
Alan
to the show.
Writing.
No,
I thought he was telling us to shut up, and I thought that's why we're here. I thought
the
show.
In the break, and yeah. Gossip later, I believe, is what she said. Anyway,
don't get technical.
Rich, seriously? ? Ask Kathy. Just because they failed in their attempt to overthrow the government doesn't mean that wasn't the goal. Attacking the House, attacking the police, attacking the results of an election, attacking the Constitution. Could it have resulted in an overthrow? Yeah.
I agree with that.
No, but okay.
Let me ask you a different question. If they had been a little more successful, do you think Trump would have invoked the Insurrection Act and called up the military the way he wanted to?
Well, with that guy, anything's possible.
I don't think anybody... I think what would have happened was what happened, was that regardless of what he was asking to be done, correct-thinking people were not going to agree to it.
I think it was a lot closer to catastrophe than...
I think you're exactly right.
I mean, aren't we finding out from the committee, whatever you make of that, Rich, but those people were begging and pleading and really didn't have much power whatsoever.
Which people?
The people around them. I mean, whether it be people like, I don't know, the vice president.
I thought the vice president stood
up. Attorneys.
Didn't the vice president stand up?
I'm talking about when they were calling in troops. When they were calling for it to stop, when so many people from the administration reached out to both the president and to his family and said, even Sean Hannity calling up begging for them to stop, and they didn't.
And you think if he had just announced, "I'm now president, regardless of what the results are," you actually think somebody would have bought that?
Yeah.
Okay.
We just disagree.
We're never going to bridge that gap.
How can you not? I mean, if you look at the MAGA crowd, how could you not say that? And it's a substantial, you know, it's a good 27% to 30% of the population. How could you not say that?
The day after
I don't know what you mean by the MAGA crowd. I know what Joe Biden seems to mean by the MAGA crowd. I'm not sure what, if you're talking about the 2% of right wing nuts. I think that they're crazy, but there's not enough of them to make a difference. If you're talking about the people who agree with the policies that Trump espoused, although in an awful way, aside from January 6th, I think that's a significant amount of people, but I don't think any of them were going to put up with somebody seeking to overturn the results of an election.
So two points. One is that through your definition, then, though, and I mean this seriously, but isn't Donald Trump one of the 2% of the right-wing wingnuts?
I don't think so, but I think that if there is blame for January 6th, I think that's on Trump, and I think it's, but I don't think it's on people around him. I actually think most of the people around him stepped up and did their job.
And also, if that were alone of going into the Capitol and looking for an insurrection of the Capitol to stop the vote to certify the election, if that were alone. Okay, I would still have problems with what you're saying, but if that were it, but all of these stories that we're hearing of different, of alternate electors and people going into the states and changing the ballots and changing the slate of electors.
Yeah, look,
I understand
the different legal strategies and different dirty tricks, and yeah, I get all that. I think we're never going to bridge this gap. I think it was a riot. I think it was awful. I think it was terrible. But I don't think it was an insurrection. And I think they're going to have trouble on the criminal side trying to show that. Yeah. So, but
they've been very successful.
So far.
They've been very successful so far. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the insurrection trials. I will note, though, going back to the
I didn't know they actually got people on sedition, though, right? I thought they're...
Proud Boy guy is up right now.
That's the one that's coming up.
No, it's in process right now.
Yeah.
You know, and it's also... Bringing it back to the beginning of the show, Joe, no, I think this is one of those situations where I think McCarthy made a huge mistake.
Absolutely.
By not putting other people on that January 6th.
I have no idea why that happened.
Because he got an order from Trump. That's why
they thought it would shut it down.
I think, on the right side, on the conservative side, I think a lot of people are pinning that directly on McCarthy. I just think that was just an epic miscalculation, and too clever by half. You know, and that's one of the biggest things that you actually hear. You know, the people bring up against him. The other problem with McCarthy, besides all the other problems, is how do you go to the American people and say, oh, if you elect us and put us in charge, things are going to be different if he's in charge?
Yeah.
I mean, what actual policy are you going to change, assuming the Republicans just win the House? What are you going to do? You're going to spend less money? I haven't seen that as a trend, right? So what are you really going to change other than endless investigations and crap?
This isn't nearly enough time, but let's go to the rich letters for 3 minutes.
Okay.
We go to Susan, who says, but what about the 70% of Republicans who, according to polls, believe that Joe Biden didn't win? Doesn't that just show that January 6th is a peril to democracy? Then... Robert says, hey, Rich, MAGA is the bed you Republicans got in with. Go ahead and deny reality at your own peril.
I have no problem with the concept of making America great again. Okay, I think that is neither racist nor insurrectionist nor anti-intellectual nor anything else.
We will never bridge that gap.
Insurrection was the premeditated purpose of the rioters, says Ted. Roseanne asked this question. What do Republicans want? I need to know what Republicans really want America to be like. A few rich people and the rest of Americans do their work for cheap, where men control women and that women don't compete for the same jobs.
Wow, see that to
the
us?
Go ahead. That the elderly have to work until they die and not have health care, that only white people live here. That we're back to the Wild West. I truly don't understand what they want. That's from Roseanne. Go ahead, Rich.
First of all, I think her question is the right question, and I want to know that too. What do Republicans want? What I was just saying before. Mm-hmm. What I get all the things you're against, but tell me what you're going to do to actually change policy to make things better. So I agree with her on that. On the other. I could say the same thing about the Democrats. And one of the things I was about to argue with off air with Rosemary was, if there was a Republican administration right now, okay, a Republican White House, House and Senate, okay, forget Trump. Assume it was like a normal Republican president, if there could be such a thing. And we had inflation at 8%, and we had the kind of costs that are going up. All you would hear in the mainstream media is, look how racist the Republican Party is. This 8% inflation is a tax on basically minorities. It's a regressive tax. It falls disproportionately on people with less money. We have gas prices that are twice what they were under the previous, in my thing, Democratic administration. And all you would hear is how this is what the Republicans are about. And with the same set of facts that we face now. Can you deny that that's what the narrative would be?
No, I don't deny it. I think you're very likely to have set up exactly what would have happened. But the Republicans would have the same good answers that the Democrats do now, which is that this is an economic crisis fueled by an extremely unusual event, a worldwide pandemic that shut down the world economy. And we had to stimulate. Places that didn't stimulate are in worse shape. Look at Great Britain right now. And that you will see the results of our policies, which will work. The Republicans would be saying the same things that the Democrats.
No, I think the difference would be that, and I know it's nuanced, but a lot of people say this was because of COVID, and we say no, this was because of a draconian governmental over-response to COVID that went on, that yes. went too deep and went on for far too long.
I know you say that.
That would be the argument.
Yeah, and UK is the counterbalance. They went the different way, and they are in terrible trouble, and they're responding to it with the tax cut. Come on.
Yeah, well,
Reagan proved that doesn't work.
Well, there,
news at 10:15, Ray, is that okay? Yeah, okay.
Oh, we're going over. Sorry.
Yeah, just go ahead, Rich. Make your point, and then no. we'll go to Ray.
No, go to Ray.
He's going to have the last word. No.
give it to Ray.
Ray, no.
Don't make me turn this radio show around.
What does Ray think?
Yeah, Ray wants to go. We'll be right back. Someone's yelling. I didn't even have time to go get coffee.
See,
no, well. I wanted coffee too. Yeah.
Wait, I thought that was a very high level.
No,
discussion
that was a
very
that was a great conversation. No,
that's
it was
because
a great
we
conversation.
Let you talk. That's all.
Well, we like, but we also
you guys asked me the question.
But we also like you. Yes. I mean, you know, you're a great guest, and you're also a good friend, and we like you. So that's
okay. Let's read the hate mail now.
And it's okay.
But
it's okay to disagree too, which is none of us are right, so it's okay to disagree. It's the
Alan?
But Ray Graff is the funniest person at 318 Central Avenue, period.
Yes.
That is true.
Yes.
Check.
Is that where we are?
What inspired that, Alan?
What he said, you know, back to the argument in progress. That was very funny.
All right. Let's see Rich bring Hunter Biden into his apology for the January 6th riot, says Michael.
I can't string those two together. I'm not.
Good. I think you prove him wrong, and that's fine. We go to
it's like the 6 degrees of separation with Kevin Bacon that used to go on a while ago. Now it's just the political version, right?
Mary says, Bloomberg report. Oh, no, that's not. That has nothing to do with what we're talking about. I'll get to that in a few moments.
By the way, I really like listening to Bloomberg Radio. I know it's amazing. It's
good.
Amazingly left wing, but you know.
Yeah, give him the call letters, Rich. We want him tuning in there instead of here.
When I can't tune in WAMC because there's a problem up on Mount Everest or wherever the hell your place is.
Yeah.
But it's on the internet.
I could swear we have.
You obviously don't have the app. You need to get the WAMC app. You can take it anywhere.
I've tried to download it, and my phone just explodes.
That's not having to do with the app. That's user error.
Not true.
All right. Now let's go to people whose heads are exploding. Good morning, panel. Politics has become a sporting event. We blindly support the red or blue team with no critical thinking of positions taken on important issues that impact our lives. We foolishly think if our team wins, we win. This must change. That from Paul.
I think we think that less than the politicians do. I think we, the people, are much more open to even supporting a candidate who we don't agree with on every issue, whereas the elected officials are just all about, you know, red versus blue.
I don't know. I get an awful lot of mail that would contradict that. Republicans are bad, for example, and Democrats are good, or vice versa. But an awful lot of people stick with that.
Dennis writes, if you want to know why you are where you are, you must look at who did what before you arrived. Look at what Obama had to fix after Bush and what Trump had to work with when he showed up after Obama was done. Now see what Biden has had to deal with when he came into office after Trump. Don't blame Biden for inflation and high gas prices now coming down. That from Dennis.
How can I not blame? I don't fully blame Biden for inflation. I actually think the biggest driver of inflation is something that was everybody's fault, and that was the 10 years of quantitative easing, you know, where the federal funds rate was like zero, okay? And that was, everybody has the same amount of blame or lack of blame for that. But the gas prices, I mean, that was, you know, that was part of the platform, right? The platform was to reduce dependence on fossil fuels, and you know, that's going to raise gas prices. I mean, you should own, not only should he not deny that, he should own that. He should say, yeah, this is what we're doing because we feel strongly about this.
And right or wrong, you do look at the current administration, and the current administration always will blame the people before them if it's bad, and they'll take credit if it's good. So yeah, it is just that's just the way politics.
But here's the real problem: if the Republicans take over, had control of White House and both houses of the Congress, what would change about inflation? What would they do that would fix things?
Yeah, you'd
it's
like
very. It's not. This is not a problem that's really in the hands completely of government, or even mostly in government.
I agree with you. Well, the first thing there's a few things you could do to change inflation. One of them is to spend less money, and we all know the Republicans are not going to spend any less money than the Democrats, right?
Correct.
I mean, they're equal on that. But the other thing you can do is one thing we've learned that I don't know that we ever focused on was the extent to which basically gas prices really affected the whole rest of the economy. Because as gas prices went, you know, you have to move things. You know what I mean? And so for a long time, I think low gas prices were masking, you know, we're keeping inflation in check, right? That and the 0%, you know, the interest rates. But I'm sorry, that in spite of 0% or, you know, low percent interest rates. So I think one thing they would do is work on, quote, energy independence and, you know, hope to bring down the price of energy, which they think would marble through the rest of the economy.
My concern, we're talking a lot about inflation, but we're ignoring the issue of social reengineering. That's why I don't trust the Republican Party right now, is that what I think that they view as what our society should be and who should have rights and who shouldn't have rights in the role of government to get involved in our bedrooms, that's where I have probably the most fundamental disagreement with the Republican Party. And it's really hard to look at the party right now and think that they're telling the truth. You think about what Lindsey Graham has said. You know, I mean, you look at he bold-faced lie. You think about the Supreme Court nominees who basically, you know, lied about Roe v. Wade being, you know, established law. I mean, I think to me that's the bigger issue that I'm concerned about.
Well, and that's the issue. I think that's an issue that party has to come to terms with, because I've said this before on air, Joe. If I was debating with Ted Cruz, I would tell him that his views
You'd have
on
to fly to Cancun,
yeah,
but
right, yes. I would tell him that his views on abortion, I think, are anti-conservative.
Yeah,
right. The same way that Barry Goldwater didn't take a view on abortion because he felt it wasn't the government's. You know, it's not the government's job to tell
He's
a woman
right.
what to do.
Goldwater
I agree.
Was right.
Yes. So
so more libertarian, really. Than,
exactly.
Yeah, okay.
And so I think that's going to be a day of reckoning for the Republicans. They've got to find some way of dealing with that, and it's going to hurt them. It's going to hurt them here in New York. You know, a guy like me who would never, I'm never going to vote for Kathy Hochul, but I don't know that I'm not going to vote for Lee Zeldin
right.
on that one issue. That one issue.
And oddly enough, we are exactly the same. I would not vote for Kathy Hochul in a normal election, but it isn't. Lee Zeldin is unacceptable on every level, mostly abortion.
Yeah.
Also election denying.
All right. We have a lot of letters. I just want Rich to know that I'm getting rid of a lot of them that start off like, who is that delusional fool?
It's okay.
It's
all right. You know what
that
you
doesn't
want.
Doesn't sound
to.
Like you're getting rid of it.
Yeah.
Well,
that's
no, no. It went on. It goes on for paragraphs. I just reading the subject line.
Just email it to me. I'll respond.
That's all right. No. Okay. This might be an obvious criticism, but it's frustrating that WAMC apparently finds it necessary to include token conservative voices like Rich to present a quote balance of perspectives on the roundtable, while continuing to ignore voices that would challenge the consensus of the panel from a progressive gasp left direction. That's from Mike in Albany.
So the panel's not left enough.
That's correct.
I'm
that's correct.
So
we need more progressive.
Sick of progressives.
I'm going to leave this one to you guys.
What
yeah,
did you say?
Really?
Go ahead.
And this will get letters too, but this is stop it. You're just ripping things apart. We are not ready for your progressive agenda, and we don't care about it for right now. We have to get past the Trump era. And
it's
I'm
funny,
sorry,
but that,
AOC
we would actually
is doing things that are hurtful for the party. Bernie has consistently done things since 2016 hurtful to the party. And Democrats, centered Democrats, have to say it.
I also think in defense of the roundtable, I mean, it's different folks almost every day. So you get there's a whole plethora of thoughts and ideas. And if you don't like Rich, you know, just give it 45 minutes.
You're
He's not going to be here.
Right. I always felt like the left wing was fairly well represented.
Yeah,
Rosemary, the same thing you just said about how mainstream Democrats feel about the progressives. I think that's how certainly conservatives feel about Trump.
Well, I don't see that there are any conservatives. That's the difference. Where are the mainstream Republicans? They have all left Congress, left office. They are a really shrinking number, Rich.
Mainstream everybody, wouldn't you say? Are there mainstream Dems left who are in power?
Oh, sure. Joe Biden. Let's start with him. He was pushed to the left. That didn't work. He came right back to his roots.
How did he
And that's
come
why
back?
He was elected.
He's been governing from the left.
No.
And I'm about to talk to Richie Nealon. Let me tell you, he's in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Well, I agree with that guy. You guys aren't left-wing enough.
Okay. Ken says, nobody has challenged the premise by Rich that Biden is responsible for higher gas prices. Please explain how, and don't give us the BS about canceling the pipeline.
But you have to go to canceling the pipeline, and here's why. I understand. He canceled the pipeline that was 6 months away from anything flowing through it, or years away, okay? But the day he canceled it, which was the first day he was in office, oil futures went up. The same way, and I could prove it by when Germany supported the coalition and said, we're not going to take energy through Nord Stream 2, I think it was, right? And it was correctly trumpeted as, this is a big win, right? The Biden, they're saying, look, we got the Germans to actually say it. Nord Stream 2 was 6 months away from actually having anything flow through it. But it's a futures market, and it shows what people are thinking. Gas prices started going up then and kept going up. And again, I don't know why you run from this. If what you're saying is we need to move away from fossil fuels and it's going to cost us all a lot of money, fine.
I think this is a valid question from Matthew, who says, Rich keeps insinuating that America is suffering because of Biden's choices, as if the rest of the world isn't worse off or experiencing the same types of financial concerns. Can Rich speak about how America is comparing to the rest of the modern world financially during this trying time?
I think, yes, I think that the Biden choices were similar to the choices made by the European Union leaders, okay, with which, so it's a school of thought with which I disagree. And there were a couple of things. I won't set you off again, but I think there was an over-response to COVID, and I think there was a prolonged response to COVID, and I think
Too late, you've already set us off.
Yeah, okay. and I think that was true in Europe, and I think it was true in the U.S., and I also think there was a draconian approach to fossil fuels that did not look forward enough, and because Europe did the same thing, right? Didn't Germany get rid of all? Germany closed down all of its. It had three nuclear power plants or something. It closed them down. So we're gonna power the whole country by wind. You know, how's that working out for you? So I think It wasn't Biden. It wasn't Biden's fault, but Biden and the European Union embraced the same set of policies that I think is too draconian, based on the nuance of what we have to deal with. You want to move away from fossil fuels? Yes, do it. But the way they did it, they ended up, probably inadvertently, giving more power to the producers like Putin, and they inadvertently ended up financing this war.
But wasn't the pipeline, let's go back to the pipeline for a second, wasn't the pipeline more about exporting rather than domestic use?
Our pipeline.
That's the pipeline you said. It wouldn't have played a huge part in the discussion right now about prices.
But it did, because prices went up that very day, because it showed two things. First, it was going to make it more difficult. You're right. It wasn't changing the amount of oil being produced, but it was changing. It would have made it easier to go to certain places. Well, allegedly made it easier than cleaner in some people's minds to go to other places. But it did two things. One, it basically reduced the amount of oil that was going to freely flow to parts of North America. And it showed that the administration was serious about cutting down its reliance on, I'll call it, energy independence, you know, air quotes around that. And it was reflected in the futures market. Prices went up. The other thing we did, this is on America, when we started producing less, I think Russia started producing somebody had to step into that market. And so Russia was making profits. Now I'm sure they're selling to China at a lower price.
In India.
But and India is kind of being a frenemy right now. Yeah. But I get it. You know, they got a lot of people and they have to, you know, they're not going to be in the same straits as Europe, right?
Right.
Yeah, so, but, you know, so I'm not blaming the world's problems on Joe Biden. I'm saying it's the same wrong thinking that has led to the problems both in America and in big swaths of Europe.
And the COVID situation, too, if I could just go back to that for a second. I mean, in part, the overreaction was, in my mind, a response to the underreaction that we initially had. Remember, we were told that by Easter it was going to be gone and that, you know, pretty much it was a hoax. And I really felt that the overreaction was in part a way of trying to make sure that there was a sense of future and control, because a lot of us felt like the country was rudderless initially when COVID was really starting to take off. Yeah. It's also in hindsight that we see that you know, it was that we could have and should have done things like brought the schools back. My question is, on a national level, how do we institute that into policy so that next time we at least try to do it better?
We did. You know, the decisions made in COVID were to save lives, which happened. Even you blasted Cuomo, but he saved lives in this state.
Oh, His mistakes
were in transparency and in touching women. Has nothing to do with his leadership and COVID. That was actually valid. He shouldn't have written about it before COVID was over. But that's a lot different than saying he'd made all the
wrong moves. No evidence that he saved lives, and I could actually tell you by doing things, by not closing the subways. Think of this. By not closing the subways. Look at a subway map and look at the swath that COVID took during the first couple of months. Why was that not done? And we find out the emergency plan for New York City doesn't include a situation where the subways may be closed. Where's the leadership there?
Okay, where's the leadership in Florida where he fires the woman who is actually counting how many deaths there are because he wants to hide it? So there's the problems. If you really want to know, the worst thing about COVID was that they voted all this money in for to replace salary and to restore and all that. And with no checks and balances, there's millions of dollars in fraud that we have not even begun to go and get back.
I agree.
And in an inflationary time, that would be really good. So if Kevin McCarthy and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz want to investigate, go investigate that.
I'm sure they will, and I'm sure it will be useless.
Will never see that investigated because Republican donors who took the money as Democrats.
No, you know what they'll investigate, Rosemary? They'll investigate the
Benghazi.
Benghazi they like. Biden has dementia.
They'll investigate money that was given to the schools and still undeployed or something like that. They'll investigate something that, you know, they think is in their political benefit, but it's not going to help anybody.
Four minutes, five letters. Here we go before Rich has to go. Personally, I find Rich's viewpoint a breath of fresh air on the program. I want to hear viewpoints from the other side and hope the roundtable will add more folks on the right. We need to try to understand where these ideas differ from others and where others are coming from. That from Nestor. Thank you. We also go to this one.
I was going to say thanks, Mom.
I didn't know your mom's name was Nestor.
I like Rich. I think Rich brings a good balance to the conversation. I understand he's a Republican, but you know, he's a human too, right? He's not a Republican. He'll tell you that. He's not a Republican.
Just acts like one.
He just, but he's a human. And the WAMC audience just needs to lighten up a bit.
Joe, are you just reading the good letters to make me feel better at this point?
No, this is sort of what's coming to the top. Joe, please ask Rich. If he is the nominee, would you vote for Trump in 2024?
And my answer is always the same. I hope I don't have to, but you got to tell me who he's running against. If he's running against Biden, I'm not pulling the lever for Biden. I don't know what I'll do.
As a progressive who has often wondered the same thing as the person who mentioned that y'all should have a lefty as well as the token righty, is astonished by the ridiculous response the panel gave. who is this we, Rosemary, this we who isn't ready for progressives? Are you speaking for dinosaurs? You're the middle, but the left deserves a voice too, and you ain't it. Welcome to the 21st century.
Well, fine. You go out and fight your battles. You haven't won very many of them. When you start winning them, we'll talk. Starting with Bernie. Come on, twice you ran. You changed the rules. You did everything you could. And we still have a Biden in there, not a Bernie. The country's not ready. By we, I mean the Democratic Party and the American people.
Rich, in a show like To Catch a Predator, when you show up at a 14-year-old's house with condoms, drugs, and duct tape and alcohol in your view, nothing is wrong because no one got raped, question mark?
Oh, no.
How pathetic is an America, a patriot, and a man to have such a ridiculous standard of proof of guilt? I have respected your perspective in the past, even if I disagreed with it. This is obviously about January 6th. Country first, political party second.
I thought I said that Trump was to blame. I thought I pretty clearly said Trump was to blame, and I said, but I thought that the people around him would stand up and not allow it to happen, which was, in fact, what happened.
You didn't think it was an insurrection. I think that probably has more to do with that comment.
Yeah. You said it was a riot, not an insurrection.
Okay.
I still agree with that. It's weird that the show is admitting that they won't have progressive voices on. Well, that was Rosemary's opinion.
No, I don't decide who's on the show. If I decided, John Fassel would never be on, for one example. So bring on the progressives.
But Rich
and
would.
I'll talk to them in person.
You let Rich on?
Yeah, I like Rich.
And Rosemary's not on Saturday, so...
I'm not on a lot of days.
Yeah, so...
Yeah. All right. We are...
That was my personal opinion. It does not necessarily affect the views of WAMC.
Or their management.
That's why we were all commentating.
I will also say, by the way, for all the letters that we get, whenever I meet WAMC listeners out in the world, okay, they make it very clear they disagree.
Yeah,
they are like courteous, civil, nice. They all say they respect different points of view. Maybe they think there should be more, but just a very nice, civil, polite group of people.
And they also recognize the time that you give for free.
And
too,
I also think that speaks to you and to your level of calmness. We have to go because Rich has a car waiting. We'll be back right after this.
BBC News with Chris Barrow. The European Union and NATO have stressed the need to protect critical infrastructure from sabotage after gas leaks were found in two major Russian pipelines under the Baltic Sea. Denmark has said the ruptures in Nord Stream 1 and 2 were caused by carefully planned and powerful explosions. Britain's central bank is to start buying government bonds to try to calm financial markets, increasingly spooked by Downing Street's fiscal policy. The pound has slumped and the cost of government borrowing has spiked since the Chancellor of the Exchequer announced a heavily criticised package of tax cuts and increased government debt. Hurricane Ian has strengthened into a Category 4 storm as it approaches the US state of Florida. Heavy rains are already battering Florida's west coast, and meteorologists have warned there may be life-threatening storm surges. The family of a young woman who died in the custody of Iranian morality police have filed a legal complaint against those involved in her arrest. Protests triggered by the death of Mahsa Amini have continued for a 13th day in Iran. Three rockets have hit Baghdad's high-security green zone during a parliamentary session, one falling just in front of the assembly. It's unclear who fired the rockets. Hundreds of supporters of Iraqi cleric Muqtada as-Sadr have gathered in Baghdad demanding the dissolution of parliament. Guinea's former leader Moussa Dadis Camara is going on trial over a stadium massacre 13 years ago. An international commission accused him of personal responsibility for the killing of more than 150 people during an opposition rally. Mr. Camara says he's innocent. Amnesty International says the security forces in Lesotho are engaging in a dangerous pattern of abuses, including unlawful killings and torture. It says police killed and injured students during a protest in June. BBC News.
Support for WMT comes from Woodland Pond at New Paltz, a senior living community with many residential options, including immediately available one-bedroom with den apartments. WoodlandPondNP.org for information. One Nature Plant Nursery, Beacon, New York, specializing in native, edible, and medicinal plants grown with organic chemical-free practices, available online and in person in downtown Beacon, onenaturellc.com. And Albany Marriott, Wolf Road, Albany, New York, a full-service Marriott hotel, implementing additional cleaning measures with flexible meeting spaces and features including mobile check-in and mobile key. AlbanyMarriott.com. Nine Pin Cider Works. Cider Sunday happening October 9th at Samuscott Orchards, 11 to 5, featuring apple picking with a pop-up hard cider bar in the middle of the orchard. NinePinCider.com for info. Inquiring Minds Bookstores, New Paltz, Saugerties, selling and buying vinyl records in their vinyl vault, focusing on jazz and classic rock, in-store shopping, curbside pickup, online, inquiringbooks.com. And Studio KTM Hair Salon, welcoming Jake Dingler direct from New York City. Joining Kristen Marquette for private one client and salon appointments, studioktm.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Thank you very much for being with us. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Bob Griffin. Thanks again to Rich Honan for hanging out with us. Nice catch,
right.
Bob Griffin.
Yes.
Good job. An open vessel of coffee was saved. So thanks to Rich. It's always good to have him here. And we thank you. Thank him very much. Okay, so Hurricane Ian is barreling across Florida, according to the governor. Winds hitting 155 miles per hour. The storm is just shy of most dangerous status. The Florida Keys saw severe flooding as the storm moved toward the western coast. This is a major, major storm, according to Governor Ron DeSantis. Officials said the hurricane could strengthen to Category 5. Only two such storms have made landfall in the U.S. in the last 30 years. This is a big deal. It's being watched very, very closely. And the governor saying that the storm is going to really barrel across the state, noting that National Guardsmen, aircraft, and urban search and rescue teams are ready to go if needed. And that just from 3 minutes ago. If you look at the maps, they are, you know, they are troubling. And going just so the storm as of right now is off the coast of Fort Myers. And then going in between Sarasota and Fort Myers, going somewhat to the south,
south of Tampa.
And then
south of Sarasota.
Through Orlando, Daytona Beach, and up then on the by Friday on the east coast of Jacksonville and Brunswick.
It's a tough situation. You know, Joe, in 2004, I actually deployed down to Charlotte County, Punta Gorda, when Charlie came in and hit the west side. And it looks like it's tracking almost to Ian's tracking almost in the same position. The blessing, and my heart goes out to anybody who's in the path, but the blessing is that it looks like it's going to skirt Tampa the same way the storms did in 2004. This is a bad scene, and you know, to give folks a sense, if a typical One story building is, you know, about 12 feet. When you start to talk about a 16-foot surge, you're talking about water that's potentially over a single-family house or certainly up into the rafters. And for those of you that know construction in Florida, there's a lot of single-family homes. A lot of evacuations, if you have family down there, be patient. It's going to take a long time to get the communications, cell towers, electricity back up. It's a good opportunity to pitch supporting the Red Cross. There are things that we can do here in New York to support the Red Cross that will support not only Florida, but also Puerto Rico, who we're not talking about right now because of what's happening in Florida.
Yeah, I have a son who's got one of those single-family homes right under where the eye of the storm is now expected to pass, and I'm a nervous wreck. I was after him for the past week to evacuate. They have evacuated in the past, but like a lot of Floridians, they think that they can weather it. So shutters on the wall and a bunch of coolers of food and water all over the house, and I'm just going to be glued to radio and TV.
And my concern, Rosemary, is that you know, we're sort of looking in the past at how storms reacted.
Right.
We say, well, you know, I've always been able
right.
you know, just to survive, and no, I'm not going to, you know, it's never happened before. I don't think
we really know.
We still don't understand the impact of what's occurring with climate and climate change. And you have to look at the bubble of warm water that is powering this storm. It is different than it's been in the past. You know, we're talking about potentially a Cat 5 hurricane hitting squarely right up Charlotte Bay, right into the harbor. So folks that sort of discount this and say, you know, I've always been. I think these storms are very, very different.
Category 4 now at 8 a.m.
What is the marker for Category 5? Do you know that?
It's only like 50 more miles an hour or something. It's really, really close. It was on the far, this morning when I looked, it was on the far edge of Cat 4. So folks understand, you know, the surge is an issue. But also if you start to think about the power of the wind picking up debris. When I deployed down there in 2004, I remember distinctly pictures of sides of buildings where 2x4s or pieces of trees were actually embedded through the wall because of the force of the force of the wind. So you have this sort of double, you know, the double barrel effect. The other concern the other issue right now is that the first responders are just not able to go out in this weather.
Right.
So pretty much if you didn't bunker down and you need help, you're not going to get help until after the storm has moved off, and it's kind of campy. It's not one of the faster moving storms. So this could have a much longer tail than we've seen in other storms.
And going into that Port Charlotte and into that area, it almost, and I don't say this to make it light, but just as a legitimate analogy, but what I've seen is it almost becomes like a pinball machine where that the storm is just sort of batting up against the coast back and forth because so it stays there longer as opposed to tracking
right.
solidly right through.
Right. And at the same time, as it's sort of having that dish, clothes washer churn to it. You think about all the debris. You think about the boats. You think about I will give certainly the officials down in Punta Gorda and Charlotte. You know, they were doing all the right things. They had good emergency plans. They're building up to the higher code. So I'm kind of hoping that what happened in 2004 will make them a little more resilient. With that said, the FEMA, the government, the federal government is going to have to be prepared to send an awful lot of resources. And part of the problems that we dealt with, you know, in the past, things you don't think about, right? It's so hot. You know, Florida's hot, right? That's, you know, you don't shovel heat, but it's so hot. And the problem is that, you know, people want to go in the water, But pretty much you can guarantee that the water, at least initially, is going to be contaminated because the treatment plants are going to be overflowing. And this was a problem that we were dealing with. Kids are out of school. What do you do with them? Parents are trying to rebuild, you know, or trying to put make sense of the crisis that's at hand. So you sort of see all of these elements are going to come together in this storm.
Do we have any idea about whether this is heading towards us in any way?
No, the last track I saw, and again, this will probably change by the hour, is that it's going to cut across Florida, hit from the west side, right. and then it's going to loop up. And now the question is, where does it loop, and how far? I mean, is it going to hit the Outer Banks of North Carolina? Is it going to go?
You seem to be concerned about from Virginia Beach up to Chesapeake Bay and into D.C., you know, that area.
Yeah, and it'll push a huge tidal wave right up the Potomac. And even there, we'll have to keep an eye on it because you have a potential bounce back in towards New York or certainly Cape Cod. And then further up, we already saw that Halifax got hit. So this is one of these storms where a movement of as little as 50 miles will have a huge impact.
And is it true, Bob? My understanding in watching the coverage is that if it as it goes across Florida, as it hits Florida, if it goes out more to the right, it has a better opportunity of being reignited by the warmer water. Yeah. Gaining pace and then curving back and going straight up.
Yeah, the warm water is the fuel. So as soon as it cuts across and hits that warm water again, that's more fuel, and that will rebuild. The interesting situation in 04, and I'm going to be watching the storm pretty carefully, is that it was the Charlie was supposed to hit Tampa, but it did this crazy dog leg right. I mean, it was a significant right-hand turn towards Punta Gorda, which was part of the problem that we had then because all the resources were further north because we thought Tampa. The issue with this storm is, you know, it's going to impact, you know, potentially Orlando and places like that, maybe even up to Jacksonville. So the idea of, okay, where do you start to how do you start to bring resources? You know, so where are your air bases? Where are your airports?
Right.
One of the things that I salute the bravery of people. Like, there are teams down at Miami-Dade International Airport right now that are purposely staying at the airport in order to try to get that up and running as quickly as they can, recognizing that that's going to be one of the initial lifelines. And I know the Coast Guard has moved their fleet, and the military have moved their fleet, Navy moved their fleet far enough out where they can start to bring them back in quickly. So there are a lot of resources that are being pre-positioned right now.
I have to go call my son and tell him I love him. This is not reassuring at all.
No, I'm sorry.
It's not.
I mean, it's a lot. I mean, one of the things that is interesting to me was when you look at the spaghetti models. So these are these models that are possible tracks that the storm could go. And then they look at a consensus. It's sort of like a poll of polls,
right,
of looking at where it could go. But you see strands of that spaghetti going all the way from Mobile, Alabama down to Fort Lauderdale. Mm-hmm. And everything in between. So the consensus would be that the track that we're all talking about is where it's most likely going to go. But the point I'm trying to make is that we don't know.
Right.
You don't know at what point it's going to take a turn to the left, a turn to the right.
Yeah, this is, if you think about it, this is not a train. Okay,
right.
So when you look
it's not
at
on
the
a track,
right? It's not on a track. This thing can go anywhere, and it can wobble. You know, part of the work that we're doing at UAlbany think so important with our atmospherics folks is how do we start to try to take more of this data to understand how hurricanes operate. You know, so understand see if we can't create more predictive models for things like hurricanes, mm-hmm. because you're right, Joe. And the problem you have is that shift that you're talking about, it can leave whole areas without resources because you just don't know where to stage, because you want to stage far enough away from where it's going to hit so that they don't become part of the, you know, they don't get hurt by the storm, but you want them close enough where they can actually make a difference and go in and try to save lives after.
So we're looking at probably making landfall around 2 or 3 this afternoon, yeah. I believe. And then we'll see where we go from there and at what category. But obviously, thoughts are with everyone dealing with all of this. Hope your family is safe and sound. Yeah. And so we'll know more tomorrow as we discuss this. I want to thank everybody for being with us. A great show this morning. And I know we ended on a bummer note, but we should get Rich back. We'll just have another, like,
he'll dance. Yeah.
All right. Alan, thank you very much.
Thanks, Joe. I always love listening to everybody. It's just so important.
Rosemary Arameo, Bob Griffin. Of course, thanks again to Rich Honan. We'll be back right after this.